Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, once again, thank you very much for joining Industrial Talk, the number one industrial-related podcast that celebrates industry heroes all around the world. Because you are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly, you solve problems, you're changing lives, and you're changing the world as we speak. That's why this platform, this ecosystem of industrial professional is here, just because you're cool. That's it. You're cool. All right. You know what we're going to be talking about in this particular podcast? Yeah. We're going to be talking about digital twin. We're going to be talking about how we manage decarbonization. The gentleman's name is John Burton. He is the CEO of Ursaleo, and he is dropping some major insights into what we're talking about, digital twins. Let's get to cracking. Yeah. You know, the technology's great. I mean, it's where do you go? What do you focus on? What's important to you? And all of that stuff. It's just an intriguing time. And for me, I'm living a dream. I'm living a Discovery Channel dream where I get to learn from the very best. And you get to learn with me because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I get to learn from the very best. It's like my own Smithsonian channel each and every day, my own Discovery Channel each and every day. All right, before we get into that conversation, two sponsors I want you to put on your radar, if you have a radar. Or whatever, put them on your radar. Armis, that's A-R-M-I-S, as well as AI-Dash. You go out to armis.com. I'll go out to armis.com. Why not? Let's do that. And great website. But you need an organization, a team like Armis, if you're venturing into the world of IoT, digital transformation, everything that's associated with Industry 4.0, you need a trusted partner when you start down that journey. Because one of the conversations that you gotta have the fact that, are you secure? Are you protected against attacks? And if you're in this world of, you know, going down this IoT, you need Armis in your group. That's go out to armis.com. It's cool tech. It's a good team, too. You're going to like that team. All right. The other one is AI-Dash. Again, we're talking innovation, but we're talking innovation from the sky, space. How can we, and what do we need to do to leverage satellites to make our, let's say, vegetation management better? To deploy the capital at the right time, at the right location? What about all of the sustainability type of questions? The technology exists today, and it's available, right? It's not out of reach. It's not Buck Rogers stuff. It's today, and it is now. AI-Dash is a trusted resource for you to just at least begin that conversation like, hey, what can satellite do for me? That's right, AI-Dash, go out there, .com. All right, I've been talking a lot about ecosystems. I've been talking about, and I think it's more so than ever, given the challenges that are taking place out there in the world, whatever it is, it's pretty fluid, pretty dynamic. I like to say squiffy because I don't know where it's going. But we still have to, We have to deliver solutions. We have to deliver solutions that solve problems and allow, right, our clients to succeed. That is paramount. And are you nimble enough to be able to take the situation that exists out there today and be resilient going forward? And I just challenge you in the fact that you need to be a part of an ecosystem. You might have solutions, but you need to be a part of this collaborative ecosystem because you need to continue to educate, right? You need to collaborate and you need to innovate if you are truly having a desire to be quite resilient in your business, and you're going to have to do that. And I think the real focus is not fluff, not hype, but real solutions to problems. real solutions that help your clients, your customers succeed. We all win. You succeed, they succeed, because we're all trying to solve problems, and the problems are coming at, what I can suspect, coming at us fast and furious, and it requires tremendous, you got to be nimble. You got to be nimble. So just keep that in mind. You got to be a part. Industrial Talk is a platform. And what we do at Industrial Talk is we create the podcasts. We support events, virtual events, conferences. We do it all because we want you to get the most out of whatever your engagements, period. That's important. It's important to you. All right. John Burton. Ursa Leo is the company. You go out to their website. It's a pretty cool doggone website. It's like buying wine, right? If your website's cool, I'm going to stick around. And it's like, hey, I'm going to buy that wine because the label looks great. It might not taste good, but I'm telling you right now, they've got a good website, very cool, very compelling value proposition, and they deliver. Unlike that cheap wine. These folks deliver. Anyway, John Burton, and he's dropping some truth bombs, is going to be talking about digital twin and decarbonization. Enjoy. John, welcome to Industrial Talk. Thank you very much for finding time in your busy schedule. And I'm looking forward to this conversation because I don't have a clue about decarbonization. So come learn with me, you listeners. John knows. All right. So, before we get into that conversation, give us a little background, who you are, why you're such an incredible professional.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You get it.
Yeah. Born in the UK, grew up in the UK, moved to California about 20 years ago. I've been living in San Francisco now for about 10. Spent most of my career in the hardware business, so messing around with semiconductors. And that's how I got into this whole industry 4.0, industrial IoT, whatever we want to call it, where, you know, the last 10, 15 years, people have been adding sensors to pieces of equipment and then gathering that data and doing things to, you know, make decisions and act on that data. So I've been in that world since probably around turn of the century, you know, around 2000. And then about 4.5 years ago.
Trust me, I'm thinking to myself, come on, the 1900s. That's what my mind went, and I realized.
I worked through the turn of a century. And then a few years ago, four and a half years ago, I got together with a friend of mine who was ex-Apple Computers, Angie Stitcher. She'd done a 10-year stint at Apple. And I said, look, you know, this whole world of industrial computing, data gathering needs to be do what Apple did to the consumer market. We've got to make it so it's easy to use. It looks nice. People can actually act on the data. It's too abstract. It's too hard to do stuff with. Mm-hmm. And that was really the guiding principle behind the company, what we started. And we've followed through with that. UI, user interface, user experience is just everything to us.
And I love that. And I agree with you 100%. If you make the solution a pain in the butt to try to use and to understand and to gather the information you need to make tactical decisions, whatever it might be, you're not moving that ball forward. Because I know for me, I'll drop off fast. I'll be lazy and then I'll be pissing and moaning about your solution. So, yeah, I'm all about it. Speaking of Apple, Tim Kobe, mm-hmm. He worked there. He designed all of the Apple stores and he agrees with you 100%. Return on experience. So he's driven by the fact that, hey, it's got to be a positive experience. It's got to have something to it, right?
Yeah, people just won't use it otherwise. I think something like 40% of IoT installations, industrial IoT installations, just don't work out. You know, they just get abandoned. It probably is. And I picked that up from somewhere. And I think that's, user experience is a big part of the problem. You've got to train people and train people and train people, and they still hate it. And the project isn't going forward.
It isn't. And I've been in those conference rooms where people are talking about how they don't like it. And then they don't understand the value. But I think there was a hype. There was this huge hype. And it makes sense. Don't get me wrong, John. It makes sense that if I can gather information, important data, a gazillion data points on an asset, I know that there's some, you know, gold in that there, you know, data, but it requires people like you and your company to be able to sort of pull that out and make it easy for me to I don't know, just be able to look into it. Okay, let's talk a little bit about decarbonization, because we're talking about digital twin, we're talking about IoT, we're talking about decarbonization. And quite frankly, can you draw the link between how this IoT, this digital twin and decarbonization are linked? Because I don't.
Sure. So so first of all, what is decarbonization? It's kind of a buzzy word that's being used for the energy that buildings consume. I mean, other things as well, but the one we're focused on is buildings. So, you know, buildings take about 40% of the world's energy usage.
Really? 40%? Yep. Buildings?
Yep.
That's a staggering stat.
Yeah, no, it's. Think about it. I mean, every building's heated, every building's cooled, every building's got lights in it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the European Union has legislated that all buildings must be net zero by 2030. Net zero means they generate as much power as they use. British government's done the same. About 20 US states have done the same. Every university you go and talk to has a sustainability decarbonization program. Every large corporation you talk to, same thing. So it's you know, if you look at the climate change and the low-hanging fruit, the two that you can probably do something about pretty quickly, building energy usage, and then the other one is methane emissions in oil and gas and other industries. But building decarbonization is a really big one.
So, and I'm going to have to sort of digress or pivot or go off on a tangent real quick. So let's take a building. And again, I want to know. So we take a building. How in the heck do you create a building that's net zero, right? One. Mm-hmm. Two, yep. Be able to say, hey, I consume 1 kilowatt over here. And then, you know, I produce one, whatever that metric is. How do you accomplish that? I what the hell?
So it's a whole bunch of different things. I mean, it's generating power. So photoelectric panels on the roof, which can generate a lot of power. It's efficiency. So making sure the building is well insulated. So it uses, you know, less heat, less cooling. Turning stuff off when there's nobody around. So, you know, you walk downtown and you still see every building lit up like a Christmas tree all night. Why? You know, why is every light in an office building on all the time?
Because it's important.
Yeah, not really. So sensing when people have moved, come into a room or when they leave a room, so you can actually turn lights on and off automatically. People aren't around. Efficient HVACs, efficient cooling, efficient heating. So instead of using gas boilers, start using heat exchangers, using some of the excess energy to instead of just pushing heat outside the building with an HVAC, use that heat to do something like heat water, efficient building materials. So there's a lot of different things. We focus mostly on showing off how the power is being generated and consumed. Oh, batteries are another one. So
batteries. I was just going to say, I put solar.
Put a big battery in there, generates power all day. You store some of that power, and all night you use the battery to power the building.
So the question I have, it might be somewhat provocative. If we're already consuming 40%, if 40% of our consumption is are in buildings, that means there's a lot of buildings out there, and I'll categorize them as brownfield. Mm-hmm. How do you take an existing building and try to make it net zero? That is a big ass. That's a big lift, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a lot harder, obviously, if you don't get to build the thing with the right materials. But it's still stuff you can do. You can still put solar panels on the roof.
Sure, yeah.
You can put a battery in. You can get the old HVAC out and put a more efficient HVAC in. You can change the water heater. Definitely harder, but. Yeah,
will you be able to get to that net zero even with these? Maybe, no, of course, it's a, you know, there's a scale there, right? Some are just a little bit more energy efficient. They might have been in than others. Is there just a way of, is there some flexibility in that?
So I think you certainly see flexibility when you're talking about large residential installations. You know, you've got a development that's 10,000 houses. Some of those are going to be using energy. Some are going to be generating energy, and you can probably add all the energies together and say, "Here's the total number." It's going to be tough for some buildings, but governments are going to start fining you. The EU is just going to tell you, "I'm sorry, your building is still using energy. You know, here's a $10,000 fine." So there's going to be a big incentive to make it happen.
Yeah, hell yeah, but What would make my butt pucker is the fact that because I'm getting fined, I'm trying to do everything I can. I've got a lot of capital outlay. I've got a lot of work that needs to be done. I've got a lot of disruption that needs to happen. I've got to, add it up. Are there just going to be some buildings that you're just going to sort of mothball and say, can't do it. I'm out of here. I can't do it.
Is that cheaper than sticking a bunch? I mean, put solar panels on the roof and then put a bunch around the building. I mean, put them in every, green space you've got and just keep doing that until you're generating enough power to run the building. That's going to be cheaper than mothballing the building.
I'll go with that. Okay, man. So then what I would think is that the cost of these solutions for existing assets, existing buildings, existing manufacturing, whatever it might be, whatever the driver is, we've got to drive down those costs too, right? If I'm going to deploy some solar or battery tech or pop in some IoT, whatever it might be to achieve that, we can't expect businesses to say, all right, you gotta be net zero, but it's going to cost you a gazillion dollars.
Yeah, well, solar panel keeps dropping and dropping and dropping. I mean, it's pretty much the cheapest form of energy generation at this point. You can stick a wind turbine on the roof. I mean, that's getting pretty inexpensive as well. So I think it's a mix of technologies. I mean, I talk to construction companies a lot, and they're all going down the path of building these buildings. The first one in Pittsburgh was done by a construction company I work with a lot. And, they're now putting together buildings that are planned to consume no energy when they're designed. So
that's pretty cool, man. You got to admit, that's a hell of a statement. Yeah. If it's a big building, whatever it might be, it's a big building.
It's like a community center or something, but it wasn't that huge, but they wanted to make it very green from day one. And they designed it to use no energy.
But that's still pretty cool. Here's how I look at it. It looks like you've got your test case right here, your bench model, and you've just scaled it up, and now it's even bigger. And I'm fascinated by the level of engineering that exists in none of that. They're going to have to walk in. I would imagine Ursulio. Does Ursulio do the sort of like, hey, contact Ursulio, and then we're going to walk through your building, and we're going to help you become more efficient, right?
Yeah, so what we do is we show them the data in a very visual way. And the reason they want to do that rather than just looking at a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet is because you've now got institutional investors coming in and giving money to universities, for example, specifically to do net zero decarbonization projects. So once you do one of those, you've got to show that investor, you designed the building, you built the building, and it doesn't actually use any energy. What we do is we give you a very, very visual way of showing that investor or showing whoever's interested
that's great. It's one thing for me to say, yep, I don't consume any energy. And then it's another thing to say, all right, prove it. Mm-hmm. Because yep. that is needed. And it has to be a reliable source of proving that you are net zero or whatever. Can you be upside down in that? Can you start wheeling power? Like, okay, we consume one, but we're sending back 1.5.
Yeah, especially in Europe, you see people who are buying and selling from the grid. So they're, they're connected to the grid, but they're generating a bunch of energy and they're storing some of that energy in batteries and they're selling excess back.
See, and that's a hell of a conversation to have with the utility space, because the utilities have to manage the fact that there's this power out there and I've got it's coming online and I've got to match my supply and demand.
Utilities become big batteries, effectively.
what was that?
Utilities become big batteries.
That's true. It's changed quite a bit since I was there. I'll tell you that much. And definitely way above my pay grade to be able to understand how to manage that. But so just for the listeners out there, right? Mm-hmm. The problem statement that we were looking at is you got digital twin, right? Yep. IoT. And then we got, of course, decarbonization. How does something like a digital twin solution help me with my decarbonization?
Again, it's all about visualizing the data. So, you think about a big building, you've got hundreds of power sensors. You've got environmental humidity temperature sensors. That data can just be displayed on a traditional dashboard, but there's a lot of it. So now you end up with, no dashboard's good for more than about 10 data points. So you've got 1,000 sensors in your building.
Yeah.
You've got 100 screens to get through to see what's going on. That's an awful lot of flipping from screen to screen to screen. If you build a digital twin, which in our case is a 3D computer model of the entire building, we just take that from the architect. The architect gives us CAD files and we turn them into a model. We can literally put that data all over the building and you know exactly where it is. And it becomes, I'm just going to look at floor 7 and I can see all the data points on floor 7. So it becomes, it's just a great way to visualize what's actually happening in your building. And allow people to navigate and allow them to show off. So again, university is a big one for us, and it's their students are really interested in climate change. They're teaching sustainability classes, so they having very visual things they can show to that class, or that class can get involved in. It's just a better way of serving up the data. I was talking to somebody earlier, said, "Well, it's a nice to have," and I go, "Yeah, I mean, PowerPoints are nice to have." You know, I don't put PowerPoints up and just have writing on them because it bores people to death. I put images. We all put images on PowerPoints. The reason we do that is because human beings are incredibly visual animals.
Yes.
And they, if they see data in a boring format, it does means less to them. If they see it in a really interesting format, they absorb the information much easier.
And what I do like about what you're talking about is that my learning curve, I would imagine, is not that steep. It may be an old way of saying, okay, I got to go dive into this data and look at this spreadsheet and look at these tables and whatever it might be to try to find those nuggets. I theoretically, I guess, take that digital twin and say, wonder what's happened on floor 7. And I can visually go there, right?
We've never given a training class to anybody.
See?
You know, That's pretty damn cool. I never read an instruction manual for my iPhone. I've never given a training class on our
phone. See? That's brilliant. That's one of those, and we've all been there. I know, listeners, you've been out there. You've been a part of a demonstration of a system that's out there, and then you're thinking to yourself, oh, my God, how in the hell am I going to navigate this? And then somebody's going to come up to me and says, all right, Scott, I need the data on this particular asset. Go find it. Oh, my God.
Yeah, or socket 17964 is using too much power. Okay, that's useful information.
But it's true.
Let me pull up the architectural plans and start looking for socket 17964.
Yeah. See, and I think that that whole model of what you mentioned, I think that that's a real clever way of success. Mm-hmm. Because I think that I don't think people in general, and it's not meant to be a negative by any means, but I think that we have many things that we're trying to consume on a daily basis. And if I can make the consumption of something easier, I'm going to do it. I'll do it. But if it's harder, no, I'm going to always gravitate to that little easier side, right?
So it's visualization of data is underappreciated in the industrial world, especially. I think Apple genuinely did make it in the consumer world. I was staying at somebody's house the other day and I was trying to use their TV. I'm a technical guy. I was an hour trying to figure out how to turn on the TV and select a channel. The control had 100 buttons on it.
It is. I break out in a cold sweat.
Yeah. And 97 of those buttons on the average TV remote are never used.
It's true. I remember we were staying at a Airbnb. The same thing. You see a couple of boxes underneath the screen. Then you see a couple of remotes, and you're just right off the bat, you're going, I sure would like to be able to watch something.
Yeah. That was Apple's genius. Yeah, my Apple TV remote has got one button on it, I think, or three buttons on it, something like that.
Hey, speaking of Apple TV, have you been watching Ted Lasso?
I did watch the whole thing. Yeah, I binged it in about 3 weeks, I think, or 2 weeks, something like that. It was pretty good.
And that's... Yeah, that's binge watching big time. We're all into it. We're getting ready to finish up season 2.
Oh, that's good. I won't tell you what happens.
No, don't. Oh, heck no. it's a great show. Listeners,
it's a really good. It's a great whoever came up with the concept. We'll take an American football coach and we'll drop him into a soccer club in the UK. And it's just a great way of looking at the two cultures and how they interact.
Yes. Oh, one of the bucket lists. I had to back onto that. Bristol Rovers are my team.
My God, how did you pick them? That's pretty obscure.
It is, isn't it? Also, I had a terminal in Bristol. Okay. And the terminal manager said, hey, let's go to a Bristol game. Okay, I'll go to a Bristol game. And apparently, you're supposed to love the team that you get to know.
Yeah, you don't. It's not like America where you move to a new city, you change soccer team, or you change football teams,
and I'm getting into rugby too.
Yeah. Oh, rugby. Well, rugby's a little because there's less regional rugby clubs than there are soccer clubs. But
I got to tell you, man. Anyway, hey, what are the roadblocks? So you're chirping. You're great. You're wonderful. I get it. It's important. Mm-hmm. All of that fun stuff. What are the roadblocks here? What are we talking about? Why?
So what do we run into? Probably the one we run into with older buildings is they don't have three-dimensional CAD.
Ah.
The building was designed, but it's just a bunch of floor plans. That's much harder for us to work with. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's much harder. So buildings less than 15 years old are going to be a lot easier for us. Otherwise, we have to get an architect to take the floor plans and turn them into 3D CAD.
Do you do that? I mean, if it's an older project.
Yeah, we have done that.
You got to do it. You got
to. Yeah, we've done it a couple of times. It's not ideal. People don't understand how to get sensors into buildings, especially retrofitting sensors, and how you gather the data from lots of different sensors. So there's a little bit of an educational piece there. We don't do that, but we can tell people how to do it.
An interesting part is like you're asking a facility manager or whatever. I don't know who the head cheese saying you're going to have to put these sensors in. Well, why? Well, these sensors are going to be able to tell you what's going on. Who's going to do it for me? It's at that level. It's like, what are you talking about? And we're going to come up with this digital twin, and we're going to make it. You're going to do this, and you're like, what?
Yeah, I mean, an electrician can install this stuff. They just need to know what to install and how to install it. And then, you basically have to have a PC somewhere in the building, an industrial PC that gathers all that data and sends it up to us. It's not hard. I mean, it's there's software I can give you. Download some software off a website, install it on an industrial PC, connect all your sensors to that PC, you're done. It's not knowledge that's commonly out there, though.
Yeah. So let's say I make that decision and I'm going to be dumping some devices out there. I've picked, let's say I incrementally approach my journey here, and I there's a HVAC here and this, that, and I pick the big ones, right? But how quickly, once I get those devices out there, how quickly can I just sort of flip, boom, get that information into sort of that digital twin environment?
So if you give us CAD of your building,
let's say we got that.
Got that, and it's good quality CAD, which any decent architectural firm is going to generate good quality CAD. Probably a week, 10 days for us for us to hand back a model. The time-consuming piece is then sort of mapping where the sensors are onto the model. Ideally, really modern buildings, that was designed by the architect, so that's all built into the architectural drawings. Yeah. If it isn't, then, we've got to know where to put the sensor readings.
Yeah, that makes sense. But
so that's probably the most time-consuming piece. You could have this thing up and running in a month.
See, that's thank you for not saying 18 months, because apparently every project's 18 months.
Everybody. This is a little bit of wiring. It's no more difficult than installing a light bulb. It's an industrial PC, and then us creating the model. And I say the most time consuming piece is where is this sensor reading you're sending me? Where in the building is that? See? So that's the trickiest thing.
I can put my arms around that. All right, we got to wrap it up. We've digressed. We burned up some time on some football European. By the way, that was a great experience, FYI. Even at that level. Bristol Rovers, go!
I vaguely aware the Bristol Rovers exist. I've never seen a game.
It was a cold, rainy day.
Well, it's a winter sport. Bristol, it probably almost still rains every day, pretty much.
It did. It was awful. All right, how do people get a hold of you? They're saying, hey, I got to get a hold of John because I need help. I need to at least have a conversation with somebody I trust.
Website. www.ursuleo.com info@ursuleo.com works if you wanted to send us an email.
That is URSALEO. I'm going to have all of that information out on Industrial Talk, so if you say that I can't get a hold of John, you're not telling the truth.
It's a pretty rememberable name. That's why we picked it. It's short and you can actually...
Yeah, if you're on video, you see it right there. It's like that's your house and you have your logo there.
It's not my house. Actually, it is my house. It's a virtual background.
Yeah, it's very good. All right. Hey, John, thank you very much for being on the old podcast. That was great.
No, I appreciate it. It's got really fun chatting to you.
All right, listeners, we're going to, once again, wrap it up on this side. Share some love with Ursa Leo, and we're gonna make sure that you get all the contact information you need. So stay tuned.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Again, thank you very much for John Burton with Ursa Leo being on the Industrial Talk Podcast. Technology and innovation being led by companies like Ursa Leo, big time important to your business and the resiliency of that business, especially in these times of uncertainty. I don't even know, but I know that technology and innovation are going to be your friend going forward. So, you know, pick out trusted people like John and Ursa Leo, definitely an important company to sort of engage with and have a conversation or two. All right. Industrial Talk, platform of industrial leaders, trying to solve problems, creating and collaborating to solve these problems. That's what this platform is all about. You need to get engaged. You need to get involved. Reach out to me. Ask me how that can happen, and we can definitely have a wonderful conversation. All right. I always say it. Be bold. Be brave. Dare greatly. Hang out with people like John, and you're going to change the world. Thank you very much for joining Industrial Talk, and we're going to have another great conversation shortly.